But during that period of time that I was there, I spent it mostly out in the country. Away from Saigon and the Pentagon briefings, the Arvin briefings, as they were. And so I was in shelters and camps and hospitals and schools and places where the people lived. And so in the villages, and I had the opportunity to photograph and to chronicle the devastation of heavy armaments and really criminal assaults on an ancient and civilian people. Those were of course the major victims.
I see west purple shower bells and tea, orange birds and bees. it cool? Is it cool? If you arrive and don't see me, I'm gonna be with my baby. I'm free. Fly on over the sea. Stay with no yellow candy string. See speakers of kites with velvet roses big and freedom flight. A present from you. Strawberry letter 22. The music plays, I set in four.
I got you sucked into listening with Jordan Davis's favorite song. I'm gonna go back to the endless bad news and horror. Proxy armies hooked on amphetamines and Wahhabist religion destroying Israel's neighbors. NATO massing troops and missiles are all around Russia. And, okay, let's do this again. McCain is directly responsible for ISIS.
Last week, John McCain made headlines saying President Obama is directly responsible for Orlando. But once the left put on the heat, McCain got out of the kitchen. He did what we're used to. He folded like a cheap lawn chair and said he'd misspoken.
So let's read this. To clarify, I was referring to President Obama's national security decisions that have led to rise of ISIL, not to the president himself. This coming from the guy pictured with Baghdadi, was this Adrian Simon or something like that?
John McCain didn't misspeak. Actually, he realized he had implicated himself. You see, John McCain, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton have been partners in creating and arming ISIS. Here are the facts. In 2011, John McCain was the lead voice in the Senate calling for arming of the so-called Libyan rebels to overthrow Colonel Gaddafi. McCain even traveled to Benghazi in April of 2011 and called them his heroes.
Are you concerned about the people that are actually fighting for the opposition here? Any worries about them?
Fighting for the opposition? They're my heroes.
Just 1 year later, McCain's heroes used those weapons to kill Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other brave Americans. After McCain, Obama, and Hillary had turned Libya into a terrorist playground, they shifted their attention to equipping the opposition against Assad in Syria. A 2012 State Department memo clearly says the opposition to Assad was al-Qaeda in Iraq.
So it says the West, Gulf countries, and Turkey support the opposition while Russia, China, and Iran support the regime. And, right before that it said the Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and AQI, al-Qaeda in Iraq, are the major forces driving the insurgency in Syria. And we, the West, support them. But, oh, here's something else. Nuclear whistleblower Mordecai Vanunu talks Mossad. And, oh, I'm sorry I have to go to this because it is endless horror and bad news. And Guns and Butter had the revelation, murder at St. Joseph's. Dr. Breen Bland put a pillow over Dr. King's face. Now, cutting flowers doesn't stop the spring. Killing King doesn't take away his dream, but we can only keep his dream alive if we don't let his killers by. But we gotta perk up and listen when we hear who those people are. So here is some genuine bad news horror.
From Frank Holloman, Director of Police and Fire, through his elder brother, Russell, to organize the change in the room. And he was with her when she gave O.C. Evers, who was a black worker who worked for the Adkins family, she called O.C. Evers on the phone, in fact, sent him out to get O.C.'s best phone number from a book they had in another small house that her husband, who had died, was dead, remember, by then, her husband had used. So he got the book, he brought it back, and he was basically, this is what he states, he was at her elbow when she called O.C. Evers. And she told O.C. that she had something for him to do, and it was very important that she speak with him. Could he speak? And O.C. Evers said that he would call her back. And they waited, and then O.C. called back. And she spoke to him on the phone. And again, Ron Tyler Adkins is standing right there, and he's telling me under oath and what he heard his mother say and what the conversation was. And he maintained that he heard her tell O.C. Evers that he, O.C., should go and approach Reverend Jackson and ask him to go to the owner of the motel. The Baileys owned the motel, Walter and Lurley Bailey, and get them to change King's room to 306. And he alleges that this is the conversation that he heard that took place. And she then hung up the phone, and so far as he knows, O.C., did what he was told, but he doesn't know that O.C. did what he was told because he wasn't present where any instructions were given to Bailey. So he was just speculating that this is what happened, and this is what he alleged took place in the deposition that we have. Now, an interesting point is, of course, Dr. King was moved from room 202 to room 306. Walter Bailey at various times has said he was approached by someone in King's organization, and he opposed he barely opposed, and his wife opposed the room change, but they insisted that Dr. King wanted to have a more air review and a better scene, and therefore, or someone was insisting on the room change. And I'm going to stress that Walter Bailey never named Reverend Jackson, because he didn't. So what we know is a fact is that the room was changed. That we know. What we also know as a fact is that after the assassination, Lurley Bailey, Mrs. Bailey, screamed out at one point right after the shooting, "Oh my God, what have I done?" And then she ran to her room and locked the door, and she had a stroke. They had to break down the door. They took her to the same hospital as they took Dr. King, St. Joseph's, and she died 5 days later. Now, those are facts, as contrasted with allegations.
What about a surgical nurse's son, Jonathan Shelby? What did he say his mother told him about what happened at St. Joseph's Hospital on the day of the shooting? And you've just mentioned that Dr. King was taken to this hospital after having been shot.
Yes. She was a surgical nurse. Dr. King was taken to the emergency room. They were working on him in the emergency room, and she was in and out of that room along with other medical professionals. At one point, she said, the chief of surgery, Dr. Breen, B-R-E, and Breen Bland, came into the emergency room with two men in suits. Dr. Bland said, "Stop working on that nigger and get out of here. Stop working on that nigger, let him die and get out of here." And he cleared the room of all these people. As they were going out, she heard them gathering up spit in their mouths, sort of like a type of thing. And that caused her to turn around and just look over her shoulder as she was leaving. And she saw the three of them spit on the body of Dr. King. The catheter had already been removed from his throat. And she saw Dr. Bland take a pillow and put it over his face and head and suffocate him. He was still breathing at the time, so this was effectively the final assassination. Now, what happened was she had to stay in the hospital overnight. She went home the next morning, and she was distraught, terribly depressed and distraught. She called all her family around her, including Jonathan, who was a boy at the time, and she said to the family in their living room, "I don't know why they had to kill him. Why did they have to kill him?" she said. And she was very, very depressed and distraught at this whole thing. Well, Jonathan himself, his mother has passed away, but he kept this with him all his life, and he is now told us this story under oath, and we took the testimony and we filmed it. The interesting thing about Dr. Breen Bland, who was chief of surgery apparently at the hospital, was that he was also the Adkins family doctor, and that Ron Tyler Adkins, the son we've been talking about, was present in a meeting where Dr. Bland was meeting with his father, and said very clearly, "If he's not killed by the bullet, at least make sure he comes to my hospital, and I'll make sure he doesn't get out alive." So we have a second source for this event. Again, Ron Tyler Adkins hearing.
For today, for this hour, for Dr. Martin Luther King, we stated before that the whole program is dedicated to his memory, but this tune is written about him and for him. And so we had yesterday to learn it, and so we'll see. Once upon this planet Earth lived a man of humble birth, preaching love and freedom for his fellow man. He was dreaming of the day peace would come to Earth to stay, and he spread this message all across the land. Turn the other cheek, he'd plead. Love thy neighbor was his creed.
Oh yeah. Inevitably we are able to thrust in his side the spear of defeat, but this we must not do. Every word and deed must contribute to an understanding with the enemy to open those vast reservoirs of goodwill blocked by ignorance and hatred. How can you like someone threatening your children and bombing your homes? This is impossible. But love is greater than like. Only by responding in this way, with this kind of love, can we be children of our... Blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah-bitty. Yeah.
Pain, humiliation, death, he did not dread. With his Bible at his side, from his foes he did not hide. It's hard to think that this great man is dead. Oh yeah. Well, the murders never cease. Are they men or are they beasts? What do they ever hope to gain? Will my country Is it too late for us all? And did Martin Luther King just die in vain? Cause he'd seen the mountaintop. And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think, 'cause we're headed for the brink. Now that he is dead, he was for equality for all people, you and me, full of love and goodwill. Hate was not his way. won't shed tears, but it won't change a thing. Teach your people, will they ever learn? Must you always kill with burn and burn with guns and kill with guns and burn? Don't you know how we got to react? Don't you know what it will bring? But he had seen the mountaintop. And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think. Everybody knows we're on the brink. What will happen the king is dead? I'm gonna say he'd seen the mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think and feel again. Are we headed for the brink? What's gonna happen now in all of our cities? Our people are right. At that one moment that you know what life is. If you have to die, it's alright, 'cause you know what life is. You know what freedom is for one moment of your life. What's gonna happen now that the king of love? All kinds of stories, but I heard that this was his favorite song, at least at the near the end of his life. Last year, a year ago, maybe more longer than that now, Lorraine Hansberry left us, and she was a dear friend, and she had her favorite song, and then Langston Hughes left us, Coltrane left us, Otis Redding left us. You can go on. Do you realize how many we have lost? Right. it really gets down to reality, doesn't it? Not a performance. Not microphones and all that crap. But really something else. We've lost a lot of them in the last 2 years. But we have remaining Monk, Miles. I love you too. And of course, for those that we have left, we're thankful, but we can't afford any more losses. Oh no. Oh my God. They're shooting us down one by one. Don't forget that. Because they are. Killing us one by one. Well, all I have to say is that those of us who know how to protect those of us that we love, stand by them and stay close to them. And I say that if there'd been a couple more, a little closer to Dr. King, he wouldn't have got it, you know, really. Just a little closer to him. Stay there. Stay there. We can't afford any more losses. He had seen mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with a threat. Dead ahead. Come on, Sam. Folks, you better stop and think. Or we're almost to the brink.
Recorded April 7th, 1968, 3 days after the death of Martin Luther King, and performed at the Westbury Music Fair, dedicated to King's memory. The song was written by her bass player, Gene Taylor, edited version appears on Simone's album, Nuff.
Yeah. From depositions that were filmed and sworn to and then taken under oath. Well, I've used excerpts from them to make points and to recite the history. I have included the most significant depots in their entirety, so I could not be accused of taking things out of context. I wanted readers and researchers to be able to have access to the entire depositions. That card, which was a prayer list that that Hoover had, was carried by Tolson and given to the Dixie Mafia leader, whom he and Hoover obviously had worked over many years, and in particular worked on this assassination. It had the names of John Kennedy on it. It was a prayer list, and it had the names of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and Robert Kennedy. And they were three people whose deaths were being prayed for.
Did the prayer list actually say that they were praying for their deaths?
Didn't say that, but that's what I was advised was Tolson told the old man, Russell Adkins, that this was the list. This was their prayer list for the deaths of these three people who were unacceptable.
Could you talk about the money that Ron Tyler Adkins witnessed Clyde Tolson bringing bags of money, didn't he, to his father to distribute?
Yeah, he brought, Ron said that money in brown paper bags was brought in by Tolson, and the father would distribute it for the purpose of getting ongoing information about King's movements and activities. There are two sources of money that were paid out in apparently in those days. And one was from the local Memphis FBI office, and these were people who were regularly on payroll, who were very active and prominent in Memphis politics and Memphis public life. And then there were special funds that he described that were brought in. And I think it's important, Bonnie, to understand that everything related to these events and this type of activity of Clyde Tolson, and by the way, we have in the book a photograph of Tolson with Adkins' family. So there's, you know, we have photographic proof that this took place. But in terms of the narrative and the deposition, and it is under oath, believe you, you know, it's there. It's also filmed under oath. That these amount to allegations, and it's important to be sure that people understand that they're allegations. It's my opinion that this young man, now not so young, of course, had no reason to lie about these events and things that he saw. And I think he was trying to unburden himself with a lot of the story that he told. But it has to be all taken in that context of allegations.
Well, in that context of allegations, there were actual individuals' names on some of these bags of money. What were some of the names?
Yeah, he indicated that he saw names of prominent people who were providing services and information on Dr. King and the SCLC movement and their plans and strategy with respect to the sanitation workers' strike. Remember, Dr. King came into Memphis to support the sanitation workers. And after that, he was going to lead the Poor People's March in Washington. And he saw these bags with names on them. One of them was of the Reverend Billy Kiles, who was a prominent black preacher in Memphis. And according to him, was being paid regularly for information and about again the movement and the strategy and related to the sanitation workers' strike. Reverend Kiles. It was at Reverend Kiles' home that the barbecue that evening was to take place. And it was Reverend Kyle's job to get Martin King out of the motel room at 6 o'clock that evening. And in fact, the police logs of the surveillance officer, who also testified at the 1999 trial, but he confirmed his own notes, which indicated that Kyle's went to the door of the motel room, room 306. Knocked on the door. The door opened just briefly, remained open for a short while, and then was closed. And Kyles walked down the balcony, north on the balcony, and just stood there and waited. Kyles had maintained all of his professional post-assassination life that he was in the room with Dr. King for the last half hour of his life, talk, and they carried on, and so he has always said that he was there for that last half hour inside the room. When I first raised this with Abernathy, who of course was in the room, he said, Billy Kyle's a liar. He was never in the room. And that was the first indication I had that until we got the documentation that Kyle's was not in fact in the room and he had lied all of those years. So that's the story of Reverend William Sammy Kiles. And pretty clear from what Ron Adkins said that he was being paid regularly for information. Yeah. So that's one example of someone who whose name was allegedly on the paper bag that Ron Tyler Adkins saw.
What do you make of Adkins' son's revelations or claims that Reverend Jesse Jackson's name was on one of these bags of money?
Well, I want to say again that this is an allegation. It is an allegation made under oath, but it nevertheless is an allegation by an individual who had a fair amount to say about Reverend Jackson.
George Bush and Oliver North and the CIA to help the Iran-Contras, and they brought in plane load after plane load of cocaine there for sale in the United States, and then they took the money and bought weapons and took them back to the Contras, all of which was illegal, as you know, under the Boland Act. But tell me, did they tell you that this had to be in existence because of national security?
Well, let me answer the question. No, they didn't tell me anything about it. They didn't say anything to me about it. The airport in question and all the events in question were the subject of state and federal inquiries. It was primarily a matter for federal jurisdiction. The state really had next to nothing to do with it.
detained. 24 people, including 11 foreign nationals, suspected of being linked to the suicide attacks at Istanbul International Airport, according to reports in Turkish media. The arrests came during raids on 16 different locations in Istanbul. Turkish authorities say three of the men who carried out Tuesday's attack have been identified as a Russian from the North Caucasus region, one from Uzbekistan, and another from Kyrgyzstan. All had links to Islamic State. Airport security footage does show one of the suspects armed with a gun. The man believed to be the mastermind of the bombings has also reportedly been identified as a Chechen ISIL recruiter. I spoke to Nikki Aaron about the details.
He's been identified as Akhmed Chateyev, and he's said to be the brains behind Tuesday's horrific attack at Ataturk Airport in Istanbul. And now, these claims are according to Turkish media. They haven't been confirmed at this point, but I can tell you a lot about this man who has a very interesting past. He's a man who Russian secret services named as the main recruiter of ISIL terrorists to Russia and European countries back in January. And back in the mid-1990s and early 2000s, when the government, the Russian government, waged two anti-terror campaigns against militants in the North Caucasus, this is when he first came to their attention. He was named as a person of interest during this time and earned the nickname Akhmed One Arm. He allegedly lost one of his arms during the Chechen conflict. He was able to leave Russia 12 years ago and he was granted asylum in Austria. And despite being on Russia's wanted list even since 2003 for terrorist activities. Now, despite Russia's warnings, he was welcomed into the West with open arms and granted this asylum, and he's been able to move freely across Europe and post-Soviet states. And by no means has he been lying low during this time. He's been arrested multiple times and in various countries across Europe. And if we take a look back at his history, it really would send alarm bells ringing.
In 2003, Akhmed Chateyev, wanted by Russia, is granted asylum in Austria, allowing him to travel freely across Europe. And he didn't keep a low profile. He was arrested multiple times in different countries. In 2008, he was arrested with ammunition and guns in Sweden and jailed. The same year, he was added to the Interpol wanted list by Russia. After his release, he was arrested yet again, this time in Ukraine, where he was found with bomb-making manuals and photos of terror victims. Following this, Russia demanded his extradition, but rights groups opposed the move. Amnesty International urged Ukrainian authorities not to extradite Chateyev to Russia, amid fears he would be at risk of torture and other grave human rights violations. In 2011, he was arrested at the Bulgarian-Turkish border. Russian pleas for his extradition were again denied. A year later in Georgia, he was arrested in an anti-terror operation and charged with illegal arms possession. Extradition was again refused. In 2015, reports emerged that Chateyev had entered Syria and joined Islamic State. He's finally put on the US terror list.
So despite being on Russia's wanted list since 2003, it wasn't until 2015 that he was actually added to the US and the UN terror lists. This comes after numerous warnings from Russia about the threat that this man poses are completely ignored.
Yeah, and that does beg the question, doesn't it? Why were those warnings ignored?
Well, the Russian authorities have once described what they call double standards. And the people that they've highlighted as people of interest, especially people branded terrorists from the North Caucasus, have been welcomed by the West, by the Western media, by Western politicians, and branded freedom fighters and shielded with these protection laws, which means that they can't be extradited back to Russia where they'd face penalties. Now, what's really worrying is that if this man, Chateyev, is confirmed to be the mastermind behind Tuesday's horrific attack, he could be just one of a number of people who have been branded by Russia as terrorists, yet welcome into the West and able to move freely around.
Well, Martin McCauley, author and Russia analyst, says the West previously dismissed warnings from Russia as they didn't consider themselves at risk.
There's double standards here. And in the West, if you designate him as Russian, then that resonates because basically the press in the West is anti-Russian. The way of thinking was that the Chechens in North Caucasus, that they targeted Russia, and they targeted Russians and Russian targets. instead of targets outside. And now you've got a situation where they've targeted Istanbul, Turkey, which is a NATO member, which is very now important. So you could say that in the past, they didn't take the Russian warnings all that seriously. But now it will be perceived. Russian information will be taken very seriously now.
The ship was ordered to head for the Middle East.
Stop the Russian coming into the arena, and number two, to help us after the war. So when I finished, he asked me two questions. One, how long it will take? I said 1 week. How many casualties? I told him less than the War of Independence. So I asked him, Mr. Secretary, what do you advise to me? Can I go home now or stay here until things will clear up? He said, no, you go home, your place is there now. I drew the conclusion that it was a green light.
Operation Pluto was to get the U.S. to nuke Cairo. I've heard this story from one source, but does that make any sense? You mentioned the fighters or bombers going out with nukes. Now, that makes as much sense as the Israeli saying they were shelled by 50 caliber, 50 miles offshore. What good would a nuke do except to, it would never be used for anything except Cairo, but does that not kind of fit like a puzzle piece? That if that your colleague hadn't gotten that message out, the story would have been that you were sunk by Egypt, our adversary. Does that kind of, I see you nod, so.
Ahorita no quiero escapar al cercano oriente, oriente olvidando los, ¿cómo se dice? Commercially exploited miners. Y otros represados por OPD. ¿De dónde viene el jefe Jordan? Now, of course, don't remember Chief Jordan driving the getaway car when our brains were blown out in 2007. The editor of the Post, Chauncey Bailey, was going to write up the $250,000 pig story, inflating the crime rates around black clubs to require half a dozen off-duty $250,000 pigs, making up $250,000 a year in this town. Let me think. Where was I going to go with that? Oh, yes. Guess where he went? hint. Freddie Gray discovered America.
Eat up little cigar on a marble stand. Ocean, looking everywhere, hard times in the city, in a hard town by the sea, ain't nowhere to run to. Thank you.
now paralyzed, her power and steering control lost. But her desperate SOS message had been picked up by the American Sixth Fleet, 500 miles away off Crete. Retaliation was ordered for the attack. On the USS America, two bombers were readied while their fighter escort was launched.
Those aircraft were brought forward, and I believe they were launched before we went into Condition November.
Condition November meant that nuclear-armed A-4 bombers were to be used. Incredibly, the U.S. was about to launch a nuclear strike against Egypt.
Okay, so let me babble about Condition November. Title of last week's show, Condition November, Triple Weister and 36 Band Pink Sing, because why would they call it that? Well, of course, William Cooper was talking about 11-22-63. He was like camped out under the nuclear bombers or something, because the whole card up their sleeve was the Sword of Damocles. They could bring down World War III and blame the Russians. That was the whole point of sending all these Oswald impersonators to try to go, you know, present this pretext that he's a commie. And so, of course, he learns Russian in the military. My Jim Wilcott, my friend CIA whistleblower, mentioned all that in his JFK Assassination of CIA Insider's Review, published in Stray Magazine in 1989. Which might be a little hard to find. Not so hard to find Greg Allen Getty on Facebook, where it's published as a note. And that's DJ Mouse's alter persona. But now I'm going blank again. Then I hit pause here. Okay, so Vic Siddall is a friend of mine, and
here we are with guest host Vic Siddall. Vic Siddall is a traveling truth troubadour. He plays guitar and sings some pretty cool songs. So, hey, welcome, Vic Siddall. Good to have you with us on False Flag Weekly News.
Great to be on board. I watch you all the time and promote you on Facebook, so it's good to be part of it.
Oh, much appreciated. Well, we're going to start out with a PSA for Christopher Bolin's talk in Madison, Wisconsin. Christopher Bolin is the author of Solving 9/11. It's a very important book in the field of 9/11 studies. And it's kind of the one book that really focuses on pinning it mainly on Israel.
Funny, but of course the elephant in the room is our apartheid murder puppets. And they have neocon dual citizens all over the place. But as a colonial settler project, they're all in that together. They hang together or they hang separately. So the Contra War, the counter-revolutionaries, we'll date them from 1776, because in 1775, there's 8 centuries of common law at this moment coming up to tell the pirates of the Potomac that their slave-mongering days are over. So that's why the revolution is 1776. Now, of course, George Windsor was paying 40 pounds a scalp, so the slime buckets of the Thames are not the heroes by any means. But let's go back 8 centuries. The barons are sitting around King John with their hands on the hilts of their swords, forcing him to sign the Magna Carta. Article 27 says that they have to respect traders from lands where the pirates of the Thames are respected. So, and jury of your peers, but by 1775, a court has gotten around to banning the slave trade, so 1776. Anyway, this is all counter-revolutionary biz, and so, how are the Israelis, how can we pin it on something outside ourselves when the Pentagon is going to have a holiday, you know, you're going to have a defense stand down and blame it on somebody else? No, whoever is hosting the false flag defense stand down, you know, the protection racket, you don't just point to somebody else. No. I mean, they're mob bosses. They, you know, kill each other. That's how we mediate power in the West. You know, fratricide. There used to be three Russian princes, and there was one. And Kiev Rus is kind of in the middle of this. Kiev, that is around 900, Peter the Great was it, or something. But then along comes Genghis Khan ruling from Moscow. Well, Mongols are us, but the Russians that put bullets through eight native people were not the ones that survived, because everything got wiped out in Russian America except for New Archangel, where Governor Baranov was a commoner, you know, like Cortez marrying native. So the Russians and the Spaniards are distinct from the Anglo. George Windsor paying 40 pounds a scalp. We, the baby scalpers, being paid for the scalps. And out here, I think the price on the Lost Coast was 25 cents for children. In no case can a white citizen be convicted on the testimony of an Indian. That was the California Indian Indentured Act of 1860. Now, of course, English has words that can only be wielded by a psychopath, like indentured, which means born without rights. So, we're gonna... Anyway, this guy is pinning it outside our country, like, oh, the Saudis did it. Well, that's what the 28 pages mind fork is all about. Although Cheney sent the Saudis the... or gave them... Remember back when he was vice president or something, and there was a question, or he was a defense secretary in the first oil war, why are we giving these wife-beating guillotine fodder our AWACS? Well, of course, just like they probably used, the Turks used the Saudi one to shoot down the Russian jet, they wouldn't have been able to do it without that cloaking device biz. Anyway, they did have a identical 777 before the original Malaysian. Just speaking of those, like Cheney, Halliburton, LBJ, the day after, or no, it was November 22nd, 1963, saying, well, I guess I'm going to have to sell my goddamn Halliburton stock. So I sent Sirhan's lawyer my JFK assassination and CIA insider's view story from my friend Jim Wolcott, and then Cheney had to kill him, of course. Oh, William Peter Pepper was taking that over, so never mind.
And its legions in the U.S., so it's naturally pretty controversial. And Christopher Bolin apparently has had some pushback as he's traveled around on his tour. Anyway, he's coming here to Madison on July 7th. The anniversary of the 7-7 London false flag. So anybody who can make it, please come on out. You can.
Don't let us go past 7-7 London, 7-7-5 London, because that's when they said, oh, Peter Power came on BBC, the slime buckets up the Thames, and said, oh, we were drilling bombs in those four locations at those four times. So multiply the odds and you get a trillion trillions to one against it, unless of course it's the inside job, which is the only possible suspect. But when you wake up looking down the barrel of the gun, you lie and say friend to the friend of our question. And when the guy with the smoking gun in hand says, does anybody see anything? Of course nobody sees anything, or boom, more smoke from the gun. And then you repeat the question about the dead reporter who just said, well, but you did it, Bob.
You can find that by way of, well, you go to truthjihad.com and click on events, and that'll take you to a listing. Or you can look for it on Facebook. It should be a really interesting event. And Vic, I understand you've seen Christopher Bolin, right?
Yeah, he spoke here last year, and he's coming back, I think, in touch with someone about that. We'll see what happens. I mean, he had some trouble. We could do a whole show on his troubles.
Yeah, right. He famously got chased out of the U.S., attacked by police, and basically set up for a malicious political prosecution, had to flee the United States. But I guess the statute of limitations is up, so he's back and causing more trouble than ever. So shout out to Christopher Bolin.
Maybe people think.
Yeah. Okay. First big story today. Big bombing in Istanbul. And the first question we always ask, Vic, is it a false flag? What was your initial impression?
I mean, my initial impression on these things is almost always like, if that's true, that's horrible. I mean, what can you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a horrible event, a very A lot of people killed and injured. It looks like it's totally real. No reports of crisis actors or anything like that. Unlike in Orlando, there are actually ambulances all over the place there at the airport. In Orlando, there's nobody in the parking lot and no ambulances. One of the many anomalies. I'm not sure what that means. But anyway, yeah, it's very sad. They're blaming ISIS, of course. Who else? Whatever ISIS is. And then they're saying that the actual bombers were Russian, Uzbek, and Kyrgyz. That is, they're all from parts of the former Soviet Union in the Russian sphere of influence, leading some to say, well, one possible suspect would be Putin getting back at Erdogan. Another suspect could be Erdogan trying to drum up support by a false flag. And frankly, I haven't seen any real convincing false flag narrative for this one yet. Have you thought of anything, Vic?
It's really hard to respond, without people saying you're just a conspiracy theorist and you don't want to have a theory before you're done with your questions. You want to ask the questions first, always. Who, what, where, when, why, who had the means, who had the motive, who had the opportunity, and who benefited how much.
That's right. And it's really important to note that in this kind of bombing, different parties can benefit. Even opposing parties might conceivably benefit. In some cases like this, for instance, with 9/11, that totally benefited Bush and the military-industrial complex and the Israelis. It didn't benefit the anti-imperialist Muslims one iota. But in other situations, a bombing can be sort of blamed on the government. People can suddenly say, oh, this government isn't protecting us, and then they can turn against the government. And indeed, that could be going on here. It could be that Erdogan's enemies in the Turkish deep state want to take him down, and they're going to cause chaos to the point that the people get fed up with Erdogan. So it's very, very hard. You have to really know the details to figure out what's the political agenda, if indeed these are false flags. Why ISIS would do...
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
My guess is as good as yours, I guess. Okay, let's move on to the next slide. The Istanbul attack, interestingly enough, we had forewarnings, as always. That's in itself somewhat suspicious, but not a smoking gun. And then in our next slide, we see another common theme of ISIS attacks. They never seem to target Israelis. There were Israeli diplomats in the airport, but rather than going after those Israeli diplomats, as radical Muslim terrorists would be expected to do, they just blew up a bunch of innocent people. I don't know. Vic, are you suspicious about the way that ISIS seems to be very friendly with Israel and never ever attacks it?
Well, any real journalist or detective of a crime would be. Yes, I am.
Indeed, indeed. And we're going to get to a story later about how the chief of intelligence in Israel is actually saying that they don't want ISIS to be defeated in Syria. It's ISIS. Some people say it stands for Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. I don't know if it's quite that cut and dried.
It might not. It seems multi nations are involved. Some are direct. You'll do this, and some are just quite willing to do it. It's at state level. State level, yes.
I agree. I think most of this stuff is conducted by different actors from different countries. It's actually transnational. We live in the age of transnational terrorism, but it's not quite what they told us when Al-Qaeda started getting blamed for things like 9/11. Mm-hmm. Well, shall we move on to Orlando, Florida? Now there, I'm pretty sure this was a false flag, unlike Istanbul.
I would like to report on the state of our war against the American people. We're mounting a sustained campaign to crack down on every American and every person of every faith and every nation and to bring them to justice. All missions are being executed according to plan without warning or provocation. Americans are being swept up in an international dragnet. Thousands of FBI agents are on the trail of other citizens here and abroad. It has everything to do with hate and evil and murder and prejudice. America's strong, strong, strong.
Federal agents, we are armed! What would you do if you knew all the things we know? Would you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away too? And then what if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would
would you stand tall and strong? Or would you turn it all away? What would you do if you knew all the things we knew? Would you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away too? And then what if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall and strong? Or would you turn it all away?
I see a message from the government. Like every day, I watch it and listen and call them all suckers. They wanted me about Osama or whatever. Picture me buying the scam, I said never. You in tune to a hard truth, soldier spitting. I stay committed, gives a fuck to die, I lose commission. It's all a part of fighting devil state mind control. And all about the battle for your body, mind, and soul. And now I'm hoping you don't close your mind so they shape you. Don't forget they made us slaves, gave us AIDS and raped us. Another push season mean another war for profit. All in secret so the public never seek to stop it. The Illuminati, 666, all connected. Stole the votes, they control the race and take elections. It's the Skull and Bones Freemason Kill Committee. See the dragon getting shittier in every city.
What would you do if you
what would you do?
Knew all the things we knew? Would you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away too? And then what if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall and strong? Or would you turn it all away?
Now ask yourself, who's the one with the most to gain? 9/11 motherfuckers couldn't stand his name. Now even niggas waving flags like they lost their mind. Everybody got opinions but don't know the time. Cause America's been took, it's plain to see. The oldest trick in the book is making enemy. A phony evil so the government can do its dirt and take away your freedom, lock and load, beat and search. Ain't nothing changed but more colored people locked in prison. These pigs still beat us but it seems we forgetting. But I remember 4 September how these devils do it. Fuck Giuliani, ask Diallo how he doing. We in the streets, holler jail to the thief, follow fuck waving flags, bring these dragons to their knees. Oil, blood, money, make these killers ride cold. Suspicious suicide, people dying never told. It's all a part of playing God, so you think we need them. While being Ashcroft, take away your rights to freedom. Bear witness to the sickness of these dictators. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major.
What would you do if
what you do?
My records always come the same. Keep it real, ain't no fillers, motherfucker blinging. Mine eyes seen the gory of the coming of the beast. So every story, every word, I'm saying fuck peace. See, you could witness the Illuminati body count. Don't be surprised, these is devils that I'm talking about. You think a couple thousand lies mean shit to killers? Nigga, I swear to God, we the ones, ain't no villains. Or any other word they think to demonize a country. Ain't no terror threat unless approval rating slumping. So I'ma say it for the record, we the ones that planned it. Ain't no other country took a part, I had their hand in. Just a way to keep you scary so you think you need them. Praising Bush, why that killer take away your freedom? How many of us got discovered but ignore the symptoms? Niggas talking loud but ain't nobody saying shit. And with the Fourth Amendment gone, eyes are on the first. That's why I'm spitting cyanide each and every verse. I see the Carlisle Group and Harris bank accounts. I see them plead the Fifth each and every session now. And while Reichstag burns, see the public buy it. I see the profiling, see the media's compliance. War is good for business, see the vicious make a savior. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major.
What would you do if you